In the meantime, as I mentioned, Sean Duke is here, the cool scientist. Watch out for Sean's articles as well in the Irish Times, and he's here looking at the science stories of the week. You're very welcome, Sean.
Hey, Declan.
Thanks for coming in. And the one we've been talking about all morning is why moderate drinking is probably not good for you. And there's a lot of question marks going on about alcohol at the moment. A survey issued a couple of days ago said that Ireland, particularly women, were surprisingly loving their alcohol.
Yeah, that's true. I've heard that, you know, women in particular.
I say surprisingly because of the league table, not of people generally liking a glass of wine now and again.
Yeah, exactly. And I think most of us would have thought that a glass of wine a night, say one a night, is fine. But, you know, the science is kind of shaky on this. And that what we've thought up to now, anyway, is that people who drink one or two drinks are healthy. This is what the stats tell us. The non-drinkers are people that drink more than one or two drinks a day on a regular basis. And you might think, well, it's obvious why the people that would drink one or two drinks too much or more, if you like, would be good. But the non-drinkers, that's interesting to me, because the non-drinkers are tend to be, on a population level, they tend to be sicker. They tend to be poorer. And, you know, there's also a number of people that would have been alcoholics. So, you know, the idea is that you're better off steering the middle ground here. So what is the story with the science of it? Well, it's conflicting. There was a recent study, I think, you know, this would be one of many, where it said that moderate drinking might be preventative in terms of preventing depression and anxiety. And also there seems to be, or up to now we've thought at least, that there's less risk of heart disease, diabetes and obesity. But the thing about it is, the way the studies are set up, is it the alcohol that's causing these positive effects? The fact that you're having two drinks a night, is that the good thing? Or is it something else about the people that are showing these positive effects? Because moderate drinkers, we know, are wealthier. They're more educated, they smoke less, they live in nicer areas, they're less likely to have been in prison, they're less likely to be overweight. There are all of these things associated with
environmental reasons as well, and sociology reasons.
You could say, right, all of those people have these positive things and they also have one or two drinks a night. So it's easy to jump to conclusions and say, oh, the moderate drinking must be good. But in actual fact, a very clever New Zealand study seems to have, what they did was they isolated all the positive benefits that moderate drinkers have in terms of living in nicer areas, having more money, etc., etc. They took all that out of it and they just compared people on the basis of removing all the environmental or social things. And when you take that away, they found that it's clear. All the environmental factors are out, that even a small amount of alcohol is associated with worse health. So it's very interesting because it seems like we may have jumped to conclusions that the moderate alcohol is giving us a positive effect. Actually, what seems to be happening is that the people who drink moderately have all of these other factors, like where they live in a nice place and they're wealthier, better educated. That actually is the key thing. And the moderate drinking isn't a factor at all. In fact, it's a slightly negative factor. So we've just put our own spin on it. And at the end of the day, it makes sense to me because really, alcohol's a poison. You know, our body has to process it like a poison, a moderate poison, if you like. So even small amounts of that are negative for our health.
Okay.
So
I wonder when you say moderate drinking, they have a couple of glasses of wine every night. Well, I know people who don't drink during the week, sort of. They don't drink at the weekend, you know, and they enjoy
Four. Well, that's actually probably better. Well, according to stuff I've read now, some of this is up for dispute, but there seems to be an idea that you have to process the alcohol. Okay, your liver, we know, can come under pressure if you drink too much. But if you give your liver a break of 3 or 4 days where you don't take any alcohol, that's a good thing.
But generally, alcohol is a poison and has to be dealt with. I've heard cheese is a poison, is that right?
Cheese?
Yeah. As a toxin or something.
As a toxin. Well, too much dairy products, all right, can give you problems in terms of arthritis and things like that. So a lot of things, if you take them too much.
Intravenous sort of, in a lab food. I think that's the safest way.
It shouldn't be in the body, except it gives us pleasure, you know. So that's the reality, unfortunately.
Right. But as they say, do it wisely. If you can make an informed decision of what is a wise amount. Now then, micro-dosing LSD is going mainstream. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. LSD, the big drug of going someplace else and staying where you are. Back in the 60s, LSD. What's all this about going mainstream?
Yeah, so of course we know LSD is a very strong hallucinogenic drug associated with the 60s and the social upheaval revolution, if you like. Now, apparently, if you look at this scientifically, if you need about 100 milligrams of LSD to go on what they call a trip, right? So that's the amount. Now, what's happening is that people have decided to take LSD, but in far lower amounts. So you're talking about 10 milligrams, so one-tenth of the amount that would actually take to get you high. And instead of taking it on a regular basis, they're taking it maybe every 3 or every 4 days. And it stays in the system, as many of us probably know. So this is called microdosing. And people now in the UK, the story is coming from The Guardian, are reporting, they've interviewed a number of mums actually for this article, where they say one or two of them have said they take this before they do the school run. Some people are taking it on their way to work. And essentially what it is it can finally ground powder that they get from magic mushrooms, the famous magic mushrooms, and they just swallow it with food. The people that do it said it makes them more alert, they're more confident, gets rid of anxiety. It's also popular out in San Francisco, which you mentioned there, but this time it's not for the hippies, it's for the Silicon Valley people.
But is this the same effect as cocaine? People take it to feel, you know, a heightened ego and fact that they're invincible. So if you're saying that certain people take it in order to feel they can cope better or do something out in the car, did you say dropping the kids to school?
Yeah. Well, the key thing that it seems to do is reduce anxiety. So I think if you took a lot of LSD, it might enhance anxiety if you're on a trip. But this very, very small amounts. This is according to people. It's not
they say, but people take Valium as well, that they can just be zombie-like if they take too much.
The senses.
No, that's legitimate. That's not an illegal drug.
That's prescribed, and it's also addictive. This is illegal, we have to say. LSD is illegal, so you have to keep that in mind. But according to the people who take it, they say that they're more focused, they're more creative, they're more productive. So they're taking it not like cocaine in work, maybe in the 1980s, to keep yourself going, work long hours. This is all about being able to stay focused on the job, to be more productive. Your mind doesn't wander as much, apparently, according to the people who take this. But let's talk about the science here. The study, there's very few studies. One study where they looked at about 100 of these people, microdosers they're called, said that yes, it does reduce the mind wandering, and it might increase creativity, but actually it increased overall the level of neuroticism, so worry, if you like. But there seems to be, interestingly, some kind of indication that there might be a decrease in depression and anxiety, at least as reported by the people who take these tiny doses. So I think there might be something good in this, but it has to be done scientifically. And, you know, I certainly wouldn't advocate it until we know more.
Okay. Sean Duke, the cool scientist with us this morning, looking at the science stories of the week. Ear gadgets which monitor our brains are on the way. So wearing the headphones and listening to the favourite music or radio station or whatever, but also it'll do a side job of looking inside your head.
Yeah, you might have heard.
The problem is all inside your head, she said to me.
So you might have heard that we're trying to link, or there's this effort that science has to try and link our brains with computers. They're called brain-computer interfaces. Why would we want to do that? Well, there are some very good reasons. Like, for example, somebody who's not able to speak, they now are able to read their thought and to enable the thought to be processed through a voice box, and they can speak. So it's amazing what they're doing. These are brain-computer interfaces. So they're talking now about hearables. We know about wearables. These are going to be called hearables. And they're going to communicate with the brain signals, the neural brain signals that pass through our ears, and monitor and do various things to help us. Like, for example, smart hearing aids are going to be developed that'll help somebody to focus on a particular voice in the room where somebody has problems with that. Tonight, that's another thing. But perhaps more interesting, they're talking about these wearables, hearables, that could augment our thought processes and work with us to try and help with our memory, to try and help problem solving. And they're talking about these wearables or hearables being like a USB port. Your ear is like a USB port where you stick it in, and you, inside 5 years, you're going to have these things that will monitor us and what we need, anticipate what we need, our state of mind, and help us cope with the world around us. So, you know, maybe for older people to prompt something if we need it to be reminded of something. There's all kinds of possibilities. So this is going to be like the computer's little port into our brain, and you'll just wear it. And so this is on the way.
Okay. Good stuff. And finally this morning, is science doomed to be unable to answer some questions? I saw that headline. What are they saying?
Yeah, so I'm a scientist, but some scientists, I think, are quite brash, if you like. They think that science, and it's true, that science has been amazing in terms of helping us understand the world and how nature works. But how far can it take us? This is an article in the Scientific American, which I thought was very interesting. Some people advocate that eventually, the longer, you know, with enough time, we'll be able to understand everything. Science will give us all the answers. There's a lot we don't know. For example, we don't know what most of the matter is out in the universe. It's called dark matter. We don't know what's on the other side of a black hole. We don't know a lot of things. We don't know consciousness, like I'm thinking here as I'm talking to you. We don't know what that is really, or how we measure it. Is there life after death? Lots of things. So how far can we go? There's this idea that science will answer things, but there's a kind of a fight back now against what philosophers are calling scientific triumphalism. So they're saying, listen, guys, science can only take us so far. You know, we are not ever going to be able to fully understand everything that's out there. It's just, we can't run an experiment to understand all of the universe. And maybe we just have to accept the limitations of science.
No way. Yeah. Don't set your sights too low.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Good to talk to you as always, Sean.
Okay.
Okay. Any scientists looking at the phenomenon of the Champions League with Liverpool's game the previous night and Tottenham's last night, and just what happened?
Yeah, what happened? Even my wife, Maria, who never watches football, said, what's going on there? Looked up from her computer to see. Yeah. It was just remarkable,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Brilliant. I'd say the final could be dull. You know, they'd be all too cagey, whatever.
Yeah.
But semi-finals, sensational.
I felt sorry for Lionel Messi.
Yeah, indeed. Because he's the only one.
Yeah, I know.
All right, good to talk to you. That's Sean Duke, the cool scientist. Follow Sean on sciencespinning.com and watch out for his articles in the Irish Times. Thanks very much indeed, Sean.